Good afternoon and welcome everybody to the first Consumer Duty Protection Forum. The objective of these sessions is to make it easier for wealth firms, particularly who may not have written as much protection business in recent years as they might have done previously, to re-engage with the protection process. We do have three tremendous speakers to talk to us about that this morning. Firstly, Keith Richards, founder and CEO of Consumer Duty Alliance. Emma Thompson, chairperson and director at Women in Protection Network, and Alan Richardson, head of expert advice at LifeSearch. Moving on, we will hopefully... Everybody is used to using Teams these days. You've got a summary of a recent set of controls. The only problem with Teams is dear old Microsoft seem to change it every other day, so little things move around and extra features get added. We have started, this session is being recorded. But I do have, we've got someone called Garin Squires. I'm sorry, under the GDPR, when we organise a meeting like this, we explicitly obtain consent for the meeting to be recorded from everybody. That does mean that we have to ask people to... Jesse, you've got your recording running, haven't you?
Yep.
Yeah. So the recording is being, the session is being recorded, but I do have to ask that nobody else uses any third party recording devices because that would be a breach of GDPR. So Garin Squires, could I please ask you to turn off your recording because you won't have had consent from everybody that's coming to the meeting. Thank you. And I, for anyone else, if we do see people join and they have a background AI recording systems, we will ask them to turn it off. That, I promise you, is not us trying to be difficult. It's GDPR and we all have to comply with the regulations. There will be a recording of this session put up approximately 2 weeks after the meeting on the Protection Guru site. If you find during the meeting you say something and you think, maybe I went a little bit too far, please contact either Jesse or myself and we will redact anything that people... if you overspoke, we're quite happy to take those things back. Failing that, in about a week to 10 days, it'll all go online. Good. This is, as I say, a very open session. We really do want to hear what you've got to say, what your thoughts are, especially your challenges, because that's great information that we can take back and challenge the whole industry on. So feel free to use the chat function and also raise your hand if you would like to ask a question. Specifically today, we're looking to explore improving customer outcomes, avoiding foreseeable harm, and the subject of write it or refer it, i.e. if you don't feel that you can place and proceed and process the business yourself, there is, you know, you are encouraged by the regulation and others to refer it to someone else who can. And there are a growing number of firms that are positioning themselves to complement wealth firms and independently just write protection business for them if they need it. So, with no further ado, I have already introduced our speakers. And we will do the feedback forms after the event. So I'm going to stop sharing. And I think Can I begin by asking Keith to talk a bit about how the wealth and protection market disconnected, and particularly what needs to be done to enable them to reconnect?
Yeah, okay,
Keith,
thanks,
over to
Ian.
you.
Yeah, thanks, Ian. Good afternoon, everyone. I think we all pretty well know that the evolution of financial advice in particular over the past 2 decades has seen quite a seismic shift towards consumers or clients who have accumulated wealth and more often looking for advice in either a pre or at and post retirement stage, where protection has become less of an obvious area of specific need or certainly demand from the client. So that has resulted quite naturally in a drop. We've also seen, in a strange way, actually, we've seen in the mortgage sector, mortgage professionals becoming more and more focused on becoming that specialist of arranging the loan, and over 50% of those arrangements are affected without appropriate levels of protection in place. So Consumer Duty, I think, looking at when I talk about evolution, Consumer Duty is not revolutionary, but it is absolutely evolutionary. It dynamically changes. It's a shift away from prescriptive rules-based regulation to outcomes-based regulation. Now, one thing I would say on that is it empowers now every firm, every advisor within a firm to think about processes that may actually get in the way of poor client outcomes. So now we have an opportunity to get rid of prescription, unnecessary processes that perhaps even hinder good client outcomes, and look at ways in which we address them. Now, Ian's already mentioned one of the core elements of Consumer Duty is to take steps to avoid foreseeable harm. So where even in the wealth space, where some advisors are very active in assessing the needs of protection needs of a client, whether it's for IHT, estate planning, or in fact they might still have business interests where they look at business protection or the need to protect against an ongoing income, others don't. They focus purely on the portfolio, the wealth portfolio of a client, and perhaps their retirement and their income and capital needs as they go through drawdown. So there's a massive gap between what we see in the market, between some advisors that are in the wealth space who still put protection as one of the core initial elements of looking at a client's needs. And it's really important that we remind ourselves of it's about an advisor's job is to look at a client's needs, arguably before their wants, because that's why people come to professional advisors, is because you know better than they do and you have a wealth of experience and qualification that puts you in effectively puts you in harm's way or protects them from foreseeable harm. So Consumer Duty now fundamentally changes the role that we all perform. It's not just about taking steps to avoid foreseeable harm. In other words, someone who arranges a mortgage product or mortgage and doesn't actively advise the client to effect protection against that debt is actually allowing the client to go on and is not potentially addressing foreseeable harm in the future. So if premature death occurred, then clearly we could end up with a repossession and an impact on the family. One of the other three core elements of Consumer Duty is enable clients to pursue their financial objectives. And this is an interesting shift that I've seen, Ian, in that whether it's caused through that evolutionary move away, looking after wealthier clients approaching or in retirement, but there's been a lot of talk about the intergenerational wealth transfer and how a big percentage of the next gen don't necessarily use the same advisor as their parents. One way I've seen dramatically advisors address this is that they no longer talk about the number of clients that they have. They talk about the number of families that they serve. In other words, they've worked very actively on looking at how they can provide an advice service to the adult children of the clients, the primary client that they have. So all of a sudden, protection has come very much back into the fore for those financial advisors, because whilst they may not have seen it for a need for their core or primary client, they definitely see it as the first stage of considering the needs of perhaps adult children of that client. So it's an interesting dynamic that we've seen that evolution moving now away from individual clients to family units. And I think we're just going to see that continue. Consumer Duty absolutely makes it incumbent upon all of us. There are some wealth advisors that might argue that they don't necessarily want to extend into advice, but what Consumer Duty actually does do now is it forces us to assess the needs of a client. If you're not in a position to address them, then you must refer on or have a arrangement to refer the client on to someone who can address that need. Typically, we've seen that with mortgages, for example, where a wealth advisor has had an arrangement with another advisor who specializes in mortgages or protection. That's something that I think we're all going to have to unite a bit more on and think of ways in which we can engage the wider market to address the overall needs of consumers.
Thanks, Keith. I'm going to come to Alan in just a moment, but I'll just pick up on a point you made there, particularly around intergenerational wealth transfer and the importance. There's a mass of data saying that anywhere between 70 and 90% of the next generation of consumers actually choose new advisors, primarily because they haven't engaged with the previous advisors. One great way to start a dialogue with the next generation is, when the children are fleeing the nest and going out, getting their own accommodation, almost certainly rented from day one. Let's face it, if the child then suffers a long-term illness, the need to pay rent is probably going to fall back on the parents, and that's a very good opportunity to say to the parents, should we not be talking to your children about an income protection plan, even if you want to take it on and help them with the cost of it for the first couple of years? Because let's face it, if something does happen, they're probably going to be looking for financial help with keeping the rent. So, better to have that insured, and a great way to engage the next generation. Alan, do you want to take us a bit further forward on this subject?
I think that's a great point, Ian. I think what we've seen with the wealth managers that we've worked with over the years, the expert proposition was designed specifically to work with wealth managers, is that protection is really a gateway conversation to their customers. It's a starting point for the conversation. And what we've seen a little bit too much, and we seem to be moving away from that, is protection tagged on to the end of the wealth conversation. But actually, if we start the conversation with protection, whether that person's ready to engage in your services or not, there's often a protection conversation that needs to happen. And especially with the children who probably aren't at that point ready to engage your services, they're not wealthy individuals at this moment in time. But if we can start protecting their income, we can start protecting their mortgages and their young families, then suddenly you've started to build a relationship there and then. Just to take a little step back here, I just want to pick up something what Keith said about Consumer Duty. I think the big thing with Consumer Duty for me is it's really customer focused. It's all about what's good for the customer, which is absolutely spot on. But I'm sure we all agree that's the right decision, the right way forward. But it's not necessarily advisor focused. So actually, I think today's world is a little bit more complicated. Arranging protection is a little bit more complicated. Doing your wealth management conversation is a little bit more complicated, a little bit more compliant and so forth. And I've never yet met a wealth manager who's not a clever individual. I've never yet met a wealth manager who's not a caring individual. So actually understanding what that barrier is to doing the having that protection conversation is probably something that we want to scratch the surface off a little bit more as well.
Thank you. That's great. During this session, we are going to ask you a series of questions to better understand the audience's feelings on protection and what would really help you in the marketplace so that we can communicate that to whoever the relevant parties are based on the answer you give. So at this point, just before we bring Emma in, Jesse is going to pop the first question on screen now. If I could ask people, please, just to give that question a quick read and tell us which of those would be the would be most inclined to make to help you want to make protection a core part of your proposition. While you're doing that, I'm going to ask Emma to come in and perhaps Emma, you've had a lot of experience working with firms where there's been an appetite in one part of the business to make that change, but it needs to be translated into all of the practitioners within the firm. In your experience, what sort of things have worked? How's that been achieved positively?
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think the culture of a business obviously needs to start off with the principal and go all the way through to every member of the team, and understanding the value of protection for your clients is absolutely key for everybody involved in actually having those conversations. And you know, what I have seen is that conversations with principals might be very different to the advisors on the ground. I've had a number of conversations with principals where there is a real desire to increase the protection focus for all the reasons that Keith outlined earlier, linking into, you know, the obligations under consumer duty. And firms that have done that successfully have perhaps employed somebody in-house to actually be referred to, because ultimately, you know, you as wealth managers know that, you know, you've got a hell of a lot to talk about with your clients, and being an expert in protection on top of all of that might just be a little bit of a stretch too far, and that's perfectly reasonable, perfectly understandable. But at the same time, the firm wants to make sure that those protection conversations are still taking place. So employing somebody in-house to be able to be there to support the wealth advisor is really something that has worked very well with a lot of wealth firms. There is also the option to obviously partner with an external firm. And I completely appreciate that there is a bit of a reluctance amongst advisors to do that. Because there is an element of trust. You need to find somebody that you can work with really closely, that you can trust to make sure that the good advice that you're giving is going to continue and when somebody else starts talking about protection. But there are some fantastic firms out there that are making this work. And I know that Alan will come in and talk about his experience being somebody that gets referred to. But one of the challenges that I have come across within some organisations is where there is a real desire for the principal to increase the protection conversation to make sure that their customers are properly looked after. And at the end of the day, you know, there is little point you having that conversation about the future pension provision, investments, savings, that long-term financial planning when you're not protecting the plan. Because pretty much everything that you're going to be talking about will be resting on the importance of that person's income in to be able to maintain those plans. So protection needs to be in place to make sure that all the things that you're trying to work with your client are actually going to happen. And if the income stops for whatever reason, then all those plans can go awry. But what some principals are telling me is that they employ, you know, they've got some employed staff, but they also have self-employed staff. And they're kind of saying, well, you know, we can't really make our self-employed advisors do that. And I think, well, actually, in the consumer duty world, you can, and actually you should, because ultimately, one, as a firm, you're taking on the responsibility. You have that responsibility there. But then so do the individual advisors. You know, walking past protection is just not really an option anymore. One, it's not the right thing to be doing for your customer. But two, there is a real financial benefit of actually including protection. And as Alan and Keith have talked about, and Ian, you know, that intergenerational wealth piece, you know, you could make sure that you are securing those children for your future client base as well. So there's a whole range of reasons why you should be talking about protection. And sadly, even though Consumer Duty was implemented, you know, for a year ago now, we haven't seen a massive uptick in conversations resulting in protection policies being taken out from the wealth manager community. Some advisors obviously doing brilliantly well. Some are referring it, which is why their own numbers are not going up, because they've actually chosen to partner with somebody else. But I still feel that we've got a big way to go, which is one of the reasons why we've got this webinar happening today.
Yeah, I think your point, Emma, about employing someone specifically, I've seen a number of instances in the past, especially if you've got a wealth firm that's focusing on business owners, professional partners, company directors, business protection. In my experience, if you've got a firm with four wealth advisors, they can very effectively, you know, keep a full-time business protection writer actually generating a very significant amount of business. And I think there's another side of that. I did a talk at an AGM for a wealth firm earlier in the year. I won't mention them for obvious reasons. Where talking to them, they had a really, really good business, could tell me, you know, to the £500,000 how much their AUA was, exact number of clients, and that number of clients represented a very high level of assets per client, but they had absolutely zero engagement with those customers in providing business protection. And it just made me feel, well, if somebody comes along and identifies that you've left all those key risks unaddressed and left the firm exposed, would that put the wealth business at risk? You know, it's probably not a situation that many employers would be happy about. Can I come back to you to talk a little bit more about how Consumer Duty has moved the goalposts a little bit, if you like? It does put the firm more in control, and the obligations that it does place on firms. And can I just, before you start on that, nudge people? We've had 50 responses. We've got 146 people online. To be fair, I am only asking for responses for advisors, but if you haven't answered those questions, could you please do so? But Keith, could you expand a bit more on the explicit additional responsibilities that Consumer Duty does impose on firms?
Yeah, absolutely, Ian. I think when we shift to outcomes, it plays to the strength of professional advice. In other words, we have gone through an evolution where sometimes we forced advisors to tick boxes to meet the regulatory reform or requirement, and there hasn't necessarily been any immediate sign of any better consumer outcomes. It's just compliance with some rules. What we've seen dramatically this time is the regulator themselves signposting and highlighting where they're seeing areas of better consumer outcomes. Now, whether that's to do with realignment of products, price and value, or more effective communications and better understanding of consumers, the way that some firms have addressed vulnerabilities of clients in certain circumstances. But what we've seen almost instantly is that focus on outcomes, which have improved that. And what we're also seeing is why this is so dramatic, is better consumer outcomes often mean better business outcomes.